Hi, and welcome to Awaken Your Inner Wisdom. I'm Cissy Williams, and in this interview, you'll meet the amazing Phyllis Carroll, who's a spiritual pioneer, an attorney, and one of America's first public witches. She spent more than 40 years helping witchcraft become the fastest growing spirituality in America and expanding its reach across the globe. Phyllis is a best-selling author and the creator of the Witch's Wisdom Tarot, and she's just published her latest book with Hay House called Spells for Living Well, a witch's guide for manifesting change, well-being, and wonder. In this interview, she shares how her path into Wicca started, and she explains how we can use spells for living well and that we are all a spell cast forth from creation. Let's head over to this interview now, where you'll meet the incredible Phyllis Carroll. Hi, Phyllis. Thank you so much for being here with us today. It's really exciting to have you here.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It truly is.
So we're going to dive into your latest book soon. But before we do that, could you please share with us, because I find it such a fascinating journey that you've been on. How did your journey into becoming a witch begin, and how has it unfolded since then?
Yeah. It began with magic and with mystery and with wonder. And that's certainly where I find myself more than 40 years later, dazzled by mystery and magic and filled with wonder. I was in law school, at a top law school in New York City, preparing to be a social justice lawyer from a family of social justice activists. And I, to this day, cannot give you a full explanation of why or what the triggers were. I have theories. I was engaged in the hyper refinement of my rational mind, lawyer, logic. And I am a very logical person, skeptical, the least likely person to ever call herself a witch, and certainly not in public. But here I am. But I started to have these really remarkable spontaneous experiences. Maybe it's because I was living in an old Italian apartment building, a tenement apartment building. Maybe it was because my instinct for survival kicked in and the intuitive side of my nature just asserted herself. I know in part it was because I got a little tap on the shoulder, came in dreams and in the experiences I was having from the goddess, which was in no way a term that I was familiar with at the time. I started having dreams that came true. I became very attuned to people, very intuitive, and I knew, not everybody and not all the time, but a lot, what they were going to say. It was like a little ticker tape going across. I could sort of read it in the front of their foreheads, and they would say what I had thought they were going to say. I knew when the phone was going to ring and who it would be. I mean, it was all these strange little odd things. At the root of them was this feeling that things were going on for which I had never received an explanation. And I was too young for the psychedelic 60s. I missed it. You know, now everybody's talking about mushrooms, but what did I know about mushrooms? I had practiced yoga as a teenager. So I think in some sense that prepared me for an expansive sense of consciousness. And I started reading quantum physics because I was a rationalist, right? So I had law books. And next to them were quantum physics, which led into a certain amount of a little bit of new age quantum physics. So I was like, okay, consciousness is much more than we thought. It is capable of interacting with the universe, with creation in far more interesting ways than we were taught. But nothing really explained the why. You know, why was this happening? A few years later, I'd graduated, I'd gone to Washington, D.C. I had a job fighting organized crime and trade unions, which I wanted to do. And the magic had stopped. All those dreams and precognitions and intuitions had just simply stopped. People will laugh and say, well, that's Washington, D.C. for you. But nonetheless, I came back to New York for another job, same field, and wanted the magic to start. And synchronicities led me to a young woman who was fabulous in all respects, except she called herself a witch. And one day, after I'd had a huge blow up with my drummer boyfriend, she said, I think you should get your tarot cards read. And I was like, She said, yeah, you should. I have somebody you should meet. And she took me to this stereotypical, dusty, dark, funky little bookstore in New York. I was like, what am I doing here? There were huge jars along one wall with herb stuff, you know, and labels and books down the middle and statues. And it was dingy and kind of dark. It smelled good, though. It smelled good. She walked me to the back of the store. There's this little table and the wall started shaking and it opened and it was a hidden door. It's very effective. And out came this very petite woman, very sweet, lovely, probably just a few years older than me, but you know, at that age, everybody feels old. And let's see, what was I then? 25 or 26, 25. And she read my cards and she knew things that nobody had known. She asked me what my question was. And I said, where does the path lie? And she said, it lies within, without hesitating. And without hesitating, I said, yes, but how do I get there? Because all of my work was about making the world a better place. Right? It wasn't about an inner life. She said, well, let's read the cards and see what they have to say. I was very impressed. She was seeing things that I had shared with no one, which was quite remarkable to me. And at the end, she said, well, I think I might know where you can find the rest of the answer to your question. I have a women's group and it meets every week and you'd be welcome to join us. I paid her. I thanked her very politely and I left. And my friend said, are you crazy? How can you leave? You have to say yes. It's a coven. And I was like, a coven? She said, yes, that she's one of the main witches of New York and that nobody gets invited. You should go. And I was like, yeah, no, they're witches and I'm a lawyer and no thanks. About a few months later, I was wandering around the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, where I'd spent a lot of time when my world was cracking open in law school. And I entered a new wing of sculpture. It was very beautiful and the energy was beautiful. It was very light filled and there were fountains and bacchantes and wonderful things. And I'm walking along, enjoying myself, wondering about my future, my boyfriend, my career, the usual things that we're all concerned with, especially when we're young and starting out, and not having any answers. And then the answer appeared. The answer to your question and the answer to the question that I didn't know I'd asked, which is, what is my future going to look like? And it was a woman. She was seated. It was a statue. It was a marble statue. It was a figure that I had seen in dreams that I had had several times when I was in law school and all of this was happening. And it was her. She was bare-breasted. In my dream, she was holding a book, but in the statue, she had a rolled up sheaf of papers. She had a drape across her lap. In my dream, it was more like a skirt. And she had a crown on her head and a star, a six-pointed star at her throat. And in my dreams, it was always a light. She never said anything to me. It was always like she was looking past me and I would wake up, which is why I remembered the dream. And like the dream, everything bleached white. I got very hot and my heart started, you know, and there was a guard there and he came over. I don't really remember him coming over. I just remember him seating me in this hard wooden chair near her. And I was afraid to look at her when I sort of pulled myself together. I started at her toes. There was a little plaque and it said the Libyan Sibyl. I spent the afternoon there. And then I ran home across Central Park to my apartment, my tiny little apartment, which was stuffed with books. And I opened my annotated Oxford English dictionary, put on my glasses. I took out the magnifying glass. And I knew that Sibyl was vaguely magical, but I didn't know precisely what it meant. And I read it and it said, an ancient prophetess, a witch. I called, they welcomed me. I went back to work with them. It all was extremely odd initially, made no sense to me. There was an altar in the center of the room, statues of goddesses, and they would stand in a circle and then they would address the four directions. I had no idea what they were doing. There were about 50 women of all ages and races and sizes and shapes and backgrounds. And each week got a little smaller because they weren't being invited back. And after about 2 months, they said, well, this is the coven, at which point I almost ran out the door. But I sensed in that room with those women the magic that I had experienced when my world had begun to open. And, you can't think of witch without thinking of magic. And so I was like, this is not what you grow up with. You know, these are not women with green faces. There's no Satan, you know. I was a feminist. This was very feminist. The divine was being addressed as feminine, as the goddess. And there was energy in the room that was palpable. And it was full of joy and discovery and hope. And over time, certainly love, you know, as we came to know each other and work with each other and care for each other. It was magic, and they had it, and it had nothing to do with any of the stereotypes. And at the same time, I had been led to the first drumming circle to come out of the work of Dr. Michael Harner, who developed core shamanism, now Alberto Villoldo and other wise teachers, but he was one of the first and one of the few. And in his very first, before he even had the foundation, there was a group of PhD students who had started a circle to practice drumming. And I immediately recognized that what these women were engaged in was a modern revival of this ancestral, indigenous, shamanic wisdom tradition that had been basically demonized and almost destroyed by the witch craze that went on for late 1400s, really as late as the mid 1800s. They were still hanging the Sami shamans when they were discovered.
Yeah. Now that's my roots. The north of Sweden and Finland. So it's a lot of wounding.
Yes.
For many, many women, obviously all over the world. And I know for myself, I think it's such a wonderful thing how the goddess is just rising and she kind of comes sneaking up on you. At least she did with me. I had no idea, no concept of it at all. And then we were running the magazine in Sweden at the time. And my husband was saying, the whole magazine is turning into a goddess magazine. I'm like, I know. I don't know where it's coming from. Because all the people I was interviewing at the time was like, you know, Megan Watterson and others all into the divine feminine. And then finally, she got me completely. And that's when I was diving into studying Norse shamanism to be a Velva, where we are doing Seder and things. And it's that unlocking of ancestral magic and power in me was just, I mean, you can't describe it. But at the same time, it felt like home. And then working through the layers of all these layers of grief and fear, and certainly for me, how I had locked it inside my body in order to protect myself and protect my children, and all of those layers to work through as that power is being awakened again.
Yes.
And I would imagine, at least now when I'm moving through it, and many of us are moving through it, there are so many of us now waking up. It's like it really is an awakening of the wise woman, of the witch, that she's rising again. But when you started, that wasn't the case.
No. No, it was the opposite.
How did you deal with all of this that within you? Because you would have had to face these layers of, I nearly see it sometimes when I'm working through it myself. It's nearly like curses were placed on us to lock in our power. And I think sometimes we did it on ourselves and others were doing it on us. It's like a pretty dark force doing it.
Yes.
And how did you do that? How did you work your way through it when it wasn't the same support as there is now?
No, none. Really none. In fact, I was one of the first people to step out to start to create foundations of support for it to happen. Yeah. I went public very shortly after my initiation, so almost immediately. And I was one of the first public witches in the United States. And I was a lawyer, so I used the tools that I had to fight on behalf of witches and Wiccans, people who were willing to come forward to be plaintiffs. So, to their credit, because without them, no lawsuit. And I fought for their rights to perform legally binding weddings, to hold ritual in public parks where other religions had been granted that right, to have a pentacle, which was a symbol of the faith and still is. on the graves of military people who had served and who had not been allowed to have a symbol of their faith, to be able to wear a pentacle to work or to school, to take time off, to have custody of your children, things like that. And
it's insane.
Yeah, I was in the media a lot, and I wrote Book of Shadows, my first book, which was about this struggle with all of the stereotypes, not what, but the stereotypes, that sense of fear, of doubt, of self-doubt. At the time, I'd gotten a fabulous, not so fabulous job at one of the most prestigious entertainment law firms in New York. So like the pinnacle of what one would aspire to, and difficult at that time because there weren't a lot of women lawyers, let alone witches. And yet the witch trauma is profound. And I'm a big advocate, proponent, and supporter of witch trauma projects. This is happening now all over the world, that women are gathering in circles to talk about the trauma of the misperception of the witch as this stereotype of demonic and evil, and how it arises out of Eve and Lilith. And this has been going on for thousands of years, right? But was made incredibly dangerous through unbelievable violence. I mean, if you look at the instruments of torture that were used,
it's incredibly insane.
Right? That human beings are capable of such things, and yet we have a modern version of it now.
Yeah.
With children being bombed in schools for out of, you know, one man's psychosis. I mean, you know. So I think for me personally, and a lot of my work now is about providing technique, practice, as we were talking about at the very beginning, means by which people don't have to be inspired by my words or by somebody else's book, but by the practices that they can use to take the blindfold off, to feel their consciousness opening into realms of spirit, to be able to see witcha. The original word is 5,500 years old, which goes back to shamanism. It meant a wise one, a seer of the sacred, basically a shaman, to use that term. And that capacity is in all of us. It was taken from us. Our power was taken from us. The divinity of our bodies was taken from us. The magic of creation was taken from us. The ability to see that creation embodies spirit and that everything is magical, everything is divine, was taken from us. Our legal rights were taken from us. We were considered chattel, right? The property of husbands and brothers, and we could be killed. You weren't allowed to. The problem that women have in theocracies like Saudi Arabia and other places where they're not allowed to go out alone, or they can't travel, they can't leave the country, they can't inherit property, they're not allowed to receive an education. That happened to us. And all the damage we did to other indigenous cultures, we did first to our own. And we did it for hundreds of years. And women have internalized that trauma. That's the witch trauma, that we're afraid to put up our hands and I mean, it's changing, that these young women who are like, I'm a witch, you know, phenomenal, right? But that fear that we have to walk alone at night to our car because of 1 in 3 women have been sexually assaulted or raped. 1 in 3 women, to put our hands up in class, right? To own our power, to own our spirituality. And I was raised in a family of activists. If you saw something wrong, if there was an injustice, you stepped up and you did something about it. And it's my nature. And there was just no way that I could practice this incredibly empowering, really beautiful, really wise spiritual practice, to be redundant, and live in fear. I was like, you know, if you're going to come get me, then come get me, but I'm going to give you a fight.
Good for you. Amazing.
And I did, that was it. And then I began teaching and speaking out and taking cases. And then I started writing. I wrote Book of Shadows, and I did a huge amount of press all over the world, which I think began to create a little space, you know, began to banish the stereotype a little bit. I mean, all the major papers and all of the country and in Europe and magazines and the Spiegel and I mean, you name it. And there were a lot of other people gradually emerging from the broom closet. And there's feminism, you know, it was inevitable that women would finally reach the churches to criticize them, right? and to knock on the door and to say, this is not the way we're going to do it, you know? But I think there's something more. The world needs her witches, her wise ones, certainly her women wise ones, because the world's so dangerously out of balance in the absence of our life regenerating magic, our compassion, our generosity. I know there are people who are dismissive and say that that's being essentialist, but it's essentially true.
I feel that if you look around, you can see how all the insanity is because we're disconnected from her. And I do feel it's the rising of the wise woman that will bring through the healing medicine the world needs. And I just loved also from the Norse sagas when I dived into that, how they talk about, and I teach this because I think it's so beautiful, but how they talk about before time, there was the ancient witch. She's the one that the old Velma that speaks, but it was the ancient witch that existed before time that created the world. You know, it's a woman, a female, these ancient primordial feminine forces that created the world, which also makes so much sense because life is born through the mother.
Yes.
And we have it already there. And in the sagas, they talk about that it's the ancient witch within the wood. And one of these woods is Yggdrasil, the world tree. And the world tree is a representation of our nervous system. And that is so cool when you get that. So then you realize, oh my God, she's within us. She's within our core, within our bones, within our nervous system, within our roots. And I do absolutely feel she's rising. So many of us. Yeah.
We have a lot in common, you and I. My father's side of the family is Norwegian.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, the discovery of this ancestral wisdom is, it's healing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the rediscovery, I mean, we have to work through the trauma and the fear and the intimidation. And certainly those forces are ascendant now that would silence women and would silence anybody, right, who opposes authoritarians. But in the end, we always win because in nature, the energy is always flowing. It's always moving. There's no hoarding in the natural world. When energy gets hoarded, the things break. So, yeah. You know, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly. For me, stepping into being a shamanic practitioner, because the Shift Network asked me this when I ran a course for them recently. And they said, what is shamanic energy medicine for you? And I'm like, well, you know, where do you start? Then I realized, no, for me, it is about unlocking my own ancestral power. Or is something going on?
Hang on. We have all kinds of weird magic going on, the two of us. Alexa, pardon me. Oh, you said something and it turned her on and she started talking. She started giving the definition of whatever you had said. Sorry.
Actually, this happened on a webinar recently. I was doing a webinar and I've never had this problem, but I was taking them through. They were actually going to awaken there and meet their ancestral witch. That's what they were going to do on the journey. And I was taking them through. So they were burning three times, rising three times through these different layers of fears. And then eventually, once they burn and risen three times and got their light back, they were ready to meet her. And before the webinar, so many people couldn't enter. Never had that before. They just couldn't find the link. And at that exact time in the webinar, the sound dropped when they were meeting the witch. So they could hardly hear my voice. And I'm like, these are forces trying to stop us all from awakening. So before our call, when the same thing started to happen with my sound, I'm like, these are forces trying to interfere. So it's like, nope, we're showing up anyway.
That's
what the women did in the webinar. They just kept on working, kept on releasing, kept on meeting, kept on awakening. It's like, yeah, we are here now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the young women and the older women in Iran. It's like,
yes,
we're done now. We're done.
Yes.
If you're going to do this, we're going to fight you tooth and nail. And when you find your purpose, you find your strength.
Yeah.
And our purpose now, I love that you did that meditation. And I'm sorry that we got interrupted.
I think it's magic.
When the world needs her witches now, the world needs witches' wisdom. Witches have always been aware that realms of spirit and creation are one continuum. That's the magic, right? Is working with that flow of energies into manifestation, back into spirit, guidance from spirit into the world. It's taken me a long time, almost 20 years, to fully get the blindfold off, to see how much the natural world embodies spirit, which is, I think, one reason I think that witchcraft has exploded. If you ask your average young woman on Instagram or Witch Talk why she's a witch, she probably won't say this yet, but I think she inevitably will, which is that she's being called by spirit, by the spirit of Mother Earth, by Mother Earth herself. And it's, as you were saying, it's in her bones. It's in our bones. We are part of this web of life. And we've been tearing it through our indifference and our infantile behavior and our belief that we've been taught, right? That we're in charge, that we know everything, and you know, it's all here for us, with our indifference to the consequences of our actions. And with the suppression of women and their innate and natural roles as witches, as wise ones, as spiritual guides and teachers and healers, that wisdom of interconnection, right, was suppressed. And so the sundering was allowed, and the plundering was allowed to go forth. But we're awake now, which is not to say that we're not all at tremendous risk. We are. The forces that you were talking about have enormous entrenched old power and literal power. They have armies and they have money and they have social media, and they control, they're sending rockets into space, right? They have a lot of real world power. They have no spiritual power. They have no wisdom. They do not have wisdom. They do not have grace. They do not have real magic. They have manipulation, but they don't have what is sacred. And whatever happens to us, the tragedy is the loss of the other innocent beings that die as a consequence of our cruelty and indifference, right? That half the species of the planet are in peril now in a very short time frame. If we don't evolve, if we don't awaken, if we don't let spirit lead us back home to a world that embodies spirit, right? Where we know how to behave in a sacred way, because we finally realized what we'd forgotten, that we were living in a sacred world, then most likely we'll perish, right? And the world will regenerate. But you know, if the pandas are gone, they're gone. And I, for one, just, I can't, right? We may not be able to stop these horrific people, but we have to do everything in our power. And little things make a difference in the impact on the earth, on the planet. Huge. I'm wearing a used jacket. Recycle, reuse, because the fashion industry is the number two polluter on the planet. So, you know, I have to buy new shoes and occasionally new jeans, whatever. But by and large, I buy recycled clothing. It's a small thing, but it's one of the things that I can do. We keep the temperature in the house with burning oil, because that's what it is. And maybe we can switch to a geothermal. We know we have to look into that, but we keep the heat down. And we leave the windows open in the spring, in the summer, and let the air move through the house. But witches are healers, and the planet requires us to heal the wounding that we've inflicted on it. And that requires us to do a great deal of healing of ourselves. But we're not alone in that healing. I think that one of the great gifts that certainly kept me practicing was that the practices first took me into realms of spirit. It was so thrilling to discover that they're open to us, right? That you don't have to die to go to heaven, but that there are means like the drum and chanting and ritual and working with the moon and all kinds of things that are available to us. Practices, casting of circle, casting spells that open our perception, right? So that we can literally see the sacred. But one of the gifts of late, especially now, as things become more challenging, is to recognize that it's not on us alone, right? That we don't have to do this alone, that there's community, that we provide support to each other in circles and, you know, whatever, however we're participating in community, but that we're also part of a bigger community, which is the community of creation. And it's giving us everything we need, air, not just to live, but to remain calm and to experience how connected, how intimately interconnected we are, and to be nourished and blessed and energized by the plants who are breathing with us, by the sun, which has always been associated with spirit, which is always, every day returns to remind us how blessed we are to have another day of life, to energize us and to fill us with hope and to give us, you know, the spirit that we need to go forward, especially if we have healing to do or battles to fight. The elements of water, that you can't live 3 days without water, you can't live, that are constantly purifying us by their nature. They enter us, they hydrate us, and they cleanse us. They take from us what we don't need. And if we were doing this properly, right, it would go into the seas and into the land to feed the fish and fertilize the ground, right? Because one thing becomes another in the mother. Everything is being utilized to nourish life and to generate life. Real magic, and it emerges from the earth. The earth embodies the law of abundance. The earth embodies spirit in the most truthful, compassionate, wise, loving. You know, it's not a mistake that we call her mother. We're so separated, and yet we still know that she's Mother Earth. She's a wise teacher. We lost a lot in the murderous brutality of the witch trials, but we have a lot of the same techniques: the circle, the seasons, the moon, the techniques, the drum, the chanting. And we have the same teacher. We have spirit, but we have spirit embodied by creation. And it's a wise teacher. It's a truly 6 billion years. This planet has known what it's doing. It knows how to create life. We still don't really, right? We don't really know. I mean, we know how sex creates life, but we don't know how to create life, but this planet does. And it turns out that at its heart is an organizing principle, which came to me through journeys and a lot of time in the wilderness with this revelation, which was then confirmed by biologists, that there's an organizing principle at the heart of creation, of at least planet Earth, that all living things, when taking care of themselves to be healthy and happy, intuitively in their bones, your phrase, instinctively, right? Intuitively, instinctively, which humans always look down their nose. Oh, instinct, you know, it's so inferior to consciousness. You know, all those things out there are so inferior to our, when animals and plants and everything takes good care of itself so that it's healthy and happy, the net effect of that instinctive natural behavior is that they make the world a better place for all life. They create the conditions. The science part of this is that it turns out that all living things, when taking care of themselves, are creating healthy air, healthy water, healthy soil, healthy temperatures, salinity or not. They're creating healthy conditions in their environment, which makes that environment more conducive, more welcoming, better for the creation and the sustenance of all life. That is such a profound spiritual principle. Take good care of yourself. Be healthy. Be happy. Let your heart lead you, right? A healthy heart, not a crazed, psychotic heart, right? But because we have consciousness, we have to ask the question, when I take good care of myself in ways that make me happy and healthy, am I also making the world a better place for all life? It's a simple question, and it's the fundamentals, the foundational question for how all of life is organized on this planet, because this planet embodies spirit. That's a spiritual principle. Be healthy, be happy, take good care of yourself. And for us, we have to go that conscious step and make choices and take actions that contribute to our well-being, but also the well-being of creation. It's a completely different moral compass, completely different. But imagine. And that's the job of spiritual practitioners, right? Is to imagine. But we don't have to. We can actually see it. It's embodied for us and it's teaching us. It's always teaching us. It's healing us and loving us and showing us and guiding us and making magic with us. And all we have to do is be a little humble and ask. And it comes right to you. with love and nourishment and joy. And it restores a sense of healing, well-being, hope. That's the purpose of spells for me, that they're spiritual practices for working with creation, with the spiritual energies of creation in order to heal, in order to be loving, in order to receive love, in order to live well, to live prosperously, to know how to give back, you know, when you're given to live with a sense of wonder and appreciation. That's all possible. The ideas of spells are that they're manipulations, right? That they're supernatural. Yeah. That patriarchal thing that's like, oh, I control the universe and I, you know, and I will say this mumbo jumbo and pull the lever and the candy bar will come down, you know, or the yacht will come down. That's patriarchal. It's not at all that. They're spiritual practices for opening ourselves to the magic of creation, of experiencing how it changes us, how it transforms us, and ultimately empowers us, and how to work with these divine energies that are part of us and part of creation, and how we shape them, whether it's a spell or a book or a podcast or a conference or a song or a child. We shape this capacity to create, right? Life, beauty, wisdom, things that make the world a better place, and we offer it to the world. That's the offering card, which took the place of the Hanged Man, interesting, in the Witch's Wisdom Tarot deck that I created with Danielle Barlow. I've always loved the Hanged Man, but it has this male idea that it is true that you have to sacrifice, right? Like if you want to eat the candy bar, you can't eat the apple. Or, you know, if you want to do this, you can't do that. There's always, right, choice. And I love the wisdom that Odin gave his eye in order to see within. He's to suffer to receive wisdom. And in when we journeyed for the cards and we got to what would have been the Hangman, you know, this was done without preconceived notion. It's like, we'll see who shows up. And what showed up was this little tree, this little world tree, with people coming from all over the world to make offerings, to pour water and make offerings so that the tree of wisdom, the tree of life, the tree that connects the world, us, would flourish and grow. And that's very much how I see spells, that they are these offerings of our own divine capacities, our gifts, enhanced by the gift of creation. They're your palette, and by forces unseen and made visible by the natural world to enhance your own gifts, that you invite spirit to work with you to co-create, and you offer it to the world. And it makes the world a better place, makes your life better, makes the world a better place. And they work. They always work. They may not work in the way you expect. They may not work as you intend. They may work in very wacky ways. But there's one way they will always work. They will always change you. They will always help you to understand yourself better, to see what your purpose is, where your wounds are, how to heal them, where your longings are, how to manifest them, where your gifts are, how to offer them. Even if they don't manifest as you think they should, they're full of wisdom to teach you what you need to know about yourself to be more present in your life, to be more fulfilled, to be happier and healthier. And they work in that way. I've never cast a spell that didn't work.
Wow. Beautiful. Beautiful. So for those that are listening, obviously there are many, many spells in your book, you know, Spells for Living Well, which I think is a beautiful, beautiful title, actually. Because it could also be well, you know, the well of life, all of that. Spells for Living Well. For those who are listening now or watching this, is there a spell that you could share now that you feel could be really beneficial?
Oh, wonderful. As you said this, I'm up in my office on the second story, and the leaves, the heart-shaped leaves of the redbud tree for me are all green and gold. And as you said that, this bird, this beautiful blue jay, beautiful blue, flew straight up the window and landed right on the ledge. Wow. So that tells me I should probably do something with birds. But okay. I was thinking about this earlier. My dog is dreaming. She curled up on the chair and she's dreaming. So if you hear a funny noise, that's her.
That's her.
I think one of the wonderful things I loved about this book, aside from the foxes that are everywhere in it, my little guide these days. I wrote a lot of little quick spells. So spells can be very elaborate with lots of ingredients, no weird or arcane ingredients in this. They don't rely upon them. Really, they rely upon your connection to the sacred, and they're an invitation. Spells are always an opening of the self to the sacred. But they can be very simple. They don't have to be elaborate. They can be utterly simple. They can be very spontaneous. And so I just sort of was like, okay, library angel, show me a wonderful spell that I could share that's easy for people to do. And it opened up to the quick spell for the power to change. So essentially, it's to change anything you want or need to. Now, will it change the outcome of the midterm elections in the United States? I don't know, but it will definitely change you. And the one thing that this spell does is it changes any sense of defeat or discouragement or depression. It is a spell that evokes joy and optimism and courage and determination. And it just works. And it's very shamanic. So you'll appreciate it. And basically, it uses an empty jar. So you need it to not too big, get a small, clean it out. And then you need dried corn or peas or beans or rice, not too much. You want to fill like a quarter of the jar, right? It's best if you can work outdoors, but you can do it inside. You twist the lid on once you've filled it a quarter, envision what you want to change, what needs changing. It can be a bad habit. It can be an old wound. It can be a bad relationship. It can be world politics, because our energy radiates outward in ever enlarging circles. And when you change, everyone around you changes and the world begins to change. So you can be, I am very ambitious. I mean, the first spells I cast in public were spells to banish the negative stereotypes and help witches return to the world.
Oh, wow.
Was it the spell? No, but if you go back and look at all my press, everyone was a spell for living well to bring the witches' wisdom back to the world. So think big. Because the things you think are impossible are not. They are possible. Tighten the lid, and then you just take it and you rattle. If you want to be formal, you can rattle in the east and call the spirits of air, rattle in the south and call the spirits of fire, rattle in the west and call the spirits of water, rattle in the north down to the earth, to Mother Earth, and call the spirits of the earth. But you don't have to, you don't even have to get that elaborate. Just rattle, rattle. And dance and spin and rattle and dance and spin and dance and spin and feel the energies moving through you, the energies of air and fire and water and earth, all of which are what you are made of, and stardust and spirit, because you are your dust and water walking. And you are chanting the spell for living well with every breath that you take. That's what you're doing. So rattle, rattle to live well, rattle to heal. Rattle to change, rattle to live well, rattle for magic, rattle for wonder, rattle for joy, rattle to get rid of, you know, psychopaths, rattle and dance and spin until you feel your energy peak, which you will because you'll get tired, and simply release it with gratitude into the realm of infinite potential, into the womb of creation, into the divine mother goddess from whom all blessings flow. Thank her for accepting your energy, your joy, your determination, your courage, your passion, your longing, your need, your sorrow, whatever propels you, right? That needs changing, and see the change, see the wonder, see the fulfillment, and drop to the ground. And now you've made a tool. You've made a shamanic tool. You've made a rattle, and it will work with you whenever you need it. When you drop to the ground, you can place the rattle on the ground, put your hands on the ground. Send your energy, send some of it into Mother Earth for her well-being, for her healing. Thank her for the life that you've been given. And the last part of any spell is to act in accord. So it's important. If you want to change something, you know, leave it in the past. Take small steps down the new path, down the path to tomorrow, to the future that you're creating for yourself. Little actions, one small thing, one thing a day. And affirmations, of course, are always good to keep you on that path, right? She changes everything she touches, and everything she touches changes. That's a wonderful incantation.
Love it. Thank you. This has been amazing. Absolutely amazing.
For me too. A very heartfelt conversation.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Thank you. Is there anything else you would like to add?
Trust your heart. Trust your intuition. Trust your instincts. Spend more time in nature. Spend less time in the trap of human culture, self-reflecting mirrors. You know, get a hammer, break the mirror, and step out into the world. It's holy and sacred. It needs her witches. It needs her wise ones. You don't have to be a witch to benefit from witches' wisdom and spells. You're a spell. I mean, we're a spell that has been cast by creation. I love spell. And if you trust
I love what you just said. Oh. That is amazing. Yeah. That's so beautiful.
I think it's really true.
Yeah, I could see that. I could feel that when you said it. Amazing.
Trust your heart. Trust. And nature will heal and guide and bless you. And cast spells for change. Cast spells to live well, to be happy and healthy. And cast spells to rediscover your power to change your life and to change the world, because we can. That's why we're back.
Yes, absolutely. That is why we're back.
The world needs our witches, and we have a lot of work to do, but it's joyful work, and we're supported in it. We are supported in it.
It's been amazing. It's been really, really amazing. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Awesome.
For more information about Phyllis and her work, visit phylliscaror.com. And to claim her free gift for all the listeners, visit phylliscaror.com/spellcasting. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Bye-bye.